Today's sponsor is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products. Get a free audiobook of your choice at www.audibletrial.com/shark. Welcome to the Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast. I'm your host, John Losovov. And joining me, as always, are my co-hosts, Mark Hoffmeyer.
I am a man who was born in England, lived in England, went away to war, came back, stole from the rich, gave to the poor, shot a mean bow and arrow, wore a mullet, defeated Alan Rickman. I am Robin Hood.
Mark, I had no idea.
Yeah.
I had absolutely no idea.
Yeah, and you know what amazes me the most is whenever I'm in England, you know, people are just like, your accent is perfect. How do you do it?
I mean, Mark, I often mistaken you for just doing a Kevin Costner impression from Prince of Thieves.
Yeah, my Kevin Costner impersonation from Prince of Thieves, I think, really nails the English accent, you know. Those Britons, when they hear me, they're like, yep, you sound like Kevin Costner from Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. And that's what they sound like.
Oh. Yeah.
So wait. So I do my Kevin Costner impersonation, and then the Britons do their Kevin Costner impersonation.
It's I don't think anybody's actually pulling anything off. You know? So, John Lemmygood, does that mean you're basically Little John to Mark's Robin Hood here?
I mean, I guess so. I mean, Mark's taller than me, though. That doesn't really work for the Little John dynamic very well.
Well, no, Little John was the, which one was the monk? I might be thinking about him, actually.
You're thinking of Friar Tuck.
No, you're thinking of Achu from Robin Hood Men Tights.
Oh, yeah. You were the guy who would just, like, drunk all the time, or at least, like, to drink. the drunk friar.
Yeah, you're thinking of Friar Tuck. Yeah.
And what's the? I love that scene in Robin Hood Men Tight when Robin Hood goes to Chewie's like, "Watch my back," and then Robin Hood gets hit three times, and Chewie's like, "You got hit three times."
That was terrible.
I love that gag. It never gets old.
You know, I can't remember last time I saw the Kevin Costner Robin Hood movie, but I feel like the Men in Tights. Like, I've seen that movie, like, probably at least once a year, you know? So I guess we can argue that Mel Brooks made the better Robin Hood movie.
I'm not going to make that submission.
So I think that if we were Robin Hoods, Lemmygood would be the beefy Russell Crowe Robin Hood.
Oh, you know, I totally forgot that movie existed.
Yep.
I'll take it. That wasn't a great movie, but I'll take it.
I mean, he's Russell Crowe, though.
Yeah, that's why I'm willing to take it right there. I'll find flattery in it.
When he was riding on that horse, the horse was like, oh, shit.
I don't know why, like, if the horse was tired, he should have just been like, yo, like, he, like, slaps his hip, jump on my back. And then he, like, piggybacks the horse.
I'm amazed that Ridley Scott let Russell Crowe get away with not using a bow and arrow and just fist fought through the entire movie. Like, it was just him throwing fists with, like, perfect accuracy.
Well, I mean... He's got like hands the size of a bear's claws. He's like, I'm not pulling a string with these.
If you were a Robin Hood in a movie, which Robin Hood would you be, Elizabeth?
Oh, I'd be the Errol Flynn version.
Ooh.
I'd be kind of a drunk.
Tights.
I'd be a drunk guy who beats on women in real life.
Oh, jeez Louise.
Hey, oh, because Errol Flynn's like that. Yeah. Yeah.
I think I would be. I don't want to say I'm a Kevin Costner. I'm going with Cary Elwes from Robin Hood Men Tights.
Why wouldn't you? I mean, he's the most charismatic.
Yeah, I think so.
Arguably, I think, the most handsome.
Yeah, arguably.
Yeah.
The most smug.
Oh yeah, yeah. Dude, no one pulls smug like Cary Elwes. Like, he has, like, the best smug yes. face ever.
Like, he just does this look where you're like, you bastard.
I think his smug face did 50% of the work in The Princess Bride.
Yeah. Let's say, Lasvath, you and Levengood, right? You guys are in, like, a hospital corridor, right? Mm-hmm. And,
Wait, are you sawing us?
Yeah, no, you guys. No, I'm no strings attaching you guys.
Oh, okay.
And so Cary Elwes walks by and steals some paper from you guys. You're like, you just figure out a way to like cure like toe jam. And he steals it from you, shows it to a doctor, and the doctor's like, "You're amazing, Cary Elwes." And when Cary Elwes is walking away, he turns around and he just gives you that smug look.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He would just let him have it.
Yeah. I would break my Russell Crowe Robin Hood rule and shoot an arrow in his face.
No, you'd just be like Mr. Fantastic and like throw your fists out. Russell Crowe's favorite character. If Russell Crowe's a superhero, he would want to be Mr. Fantastic because he could just do nothing but fist fight from long distance.
I don't want to fist fight anyone from long distance. That sounds horrible for like the opponent.
Like he's just kind of hanging out behind a corner. We're safe.
Right.
No. Nope.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
He could hit you with the cell phone from like 200 yards away and he wouldn't have to throw it.
Yeah. Well, all right. I think that's enough for the intro. I think it's time to start the podcast like we usually do with listener questions. Mark, I think you have listener questions for us this week.
Yeah. And it's kind of a funny story. Behind this, when I was at Florida State, my buddy Danny, he and I shot a lot of short films. Actually, on this podcast, the one for what you'll find out later, the non-human characters, I'll attach the video on it. But like when we were at Florida State, he and I used to record a lot of stuff and, you know, make like, you know, stupid little movies and like short films for classes, like class assignments and everything. And one night he called me up about, I don't know, a month ago. And he must have been pretty roasted, you know, like I guess he'd been drinking a little bit. So he calls me up. He's like, "I got a perfect question for you." So I listen to it. And instead of writing it down, I'm like, "Yeah, I'll just keep it on my voicemail so, you know, I can remember it." But then I deleted that voicemail. So then I didn't remember the question. So I texted him. I was like, "Hey, man, do you remember the question?" He's like, "I don't remember the question." So this question is, the other night, my good friend Danny left me a late night question via voicemail. We both don't remember what the question was. So in honor of that question, we're going to ask, what movies have you forgotten about almost immediately after watching?
This one's kind of tough because, like, it's hard to remember.
About them?
Yeah, it's just hard to remember. Like, well, it's funny. Like, I just had like a sudden realization. Like, I just mentioned one in the previous segment. Like, the Russell Crowe Robin Hood movie. I saw it, and it just never really kind of stuck. Let's see, another one is The
That's
King.
True. When Mark brought that up, yeah. I was like, wait, there's a Russell Crowe. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, it was all right. The King's Speech. I remember I saw that in a little art house theater in Tallahassee. I really liked it, and I never thought about it again. Like, I'm like, oh, yeah. And there's others that I...
It's an Oscar-winning movie that you just totally dismissed in your subconscious.
It won Best Picture, and I just totally did not ever think about it again.
Didn't it win, like, 6 Oscars? Like, that's a
powerful... Yeah, beat out Social Network.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know what I had? So I saw a box set the other day for the Bourne movies, and I was like, I love the first 4, but the one that came out this past summer, Jason Bourne, I went, oh, yeah.
I saw it.
Yeah. And I was like, I have not thought about that movie at all. I write some pithy stuff about it after I watch it, 5 thoughts about it. So that's probably the last time I thought about that movie. But I just forgot. I have not thought about that movie since I watched it. Because it's just, you know, on the box for that movie, they're like, the highest praise they give it is Matt Damon returns to his best role. I'm like, well, what is that? Is that good? Like, is this movie good?
Was that a compliment or an insult?
Yeah. Like, I totally forgot that this... And I was actually angry because I'm like, I wanted to Renner... Because Justin Lin from The Fast and Furious was supposed to direct Jeremy Renner in another Bourne movie. And that would have been sweet. But it didn't happen. And instead, I just forgot about... Oh, yeah. Tommy Lee Jones was in it.
Oh, yeah.
I actually didn't... I don't even know.
Yeah.
Goodness.
Okay, ready?
Yeah.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3.
Oh, the 90s version where they went back in time to feudal Japan?
Yeah, where I know for a fact that I have seen that from start to finish in a single sitting more than once. And you know how, like, sometimes there's a movie you haven't seen for a while and you don't remember any of it? Because next week we're doing the movie The Arrival in our discussion. And we were discussing this before we started recording this episode. And, like, none of us really remember much from that. But I think we can all say that if we were to think back, like, we remember a time when we know that we remembered something from that movie.
I remember one glimpse of it. And I think it's like of a Japanese guy getting fireworks shot at him or something.
But like I don't remember like much of anything from that movie, but I know for a fact that there was a time that I did remember things from that movie. Like, I cannot say that for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Part 3.
What? I keep confusing it with Surf Ninjas.
Now, you see, I remember a lot of Surf Ninjas.
Because Leslie Nielsen's in that.
And so was Ernie Reyes Jr., who was in TMNT 2, which was awesome.
And was he one of the turtles in the third one?
Was he?
Hey, and I just watched that Jack Reacher movie that just came out. Jack Reacher, Never Stop Reaching.
Was that forgettable?
Yeah.
You know, earlier this year I saw that Kevin Bacon horror movie called The Darkness. And I swear to you that, like, right now, I cannot explain much more to you about that movie than if you just saw the trailer.
Yeah.
Like, I have blocked that horrible movie out of my head.
I think movies sometimes are just so like, the really mundane movies. Like, Jupiter Ascending, I remember that movie. But the latest Bourne film, it's just so blah. It's like Egg from Arrested Development.
So the 95% Wolf Boy shirtless roller skating hover Channing Tatum and the bees that recognize human royalty.
And they that are with Sean Bean.
And Eddie Redmayne talking like this.
I lost it. I lost my Eddie Redmayne.
That had a greater impact on you than the new Bourne movie.
Oh, man. Yeah.
I totally forgot. I'm serious. I don't think I forgot. I just haven't given it a second thought.
So Mila Kunis inheriting most of the universe and then returning to her day job as an immigrant housekeeper had a greater impact on you than the return of the greatest American movie spy of the decade.
And I haven't thought much about Now You See Me 2 either.
Oh, God, that poor movie. I can't remember that much from that now that you say it. Like, I know I saw it.
Wait, it's coming back to me. Like, I'm getting a flashback, and I see most of it in my head right now.
I am not getting it.
Have you seen that TV show Chuck where he gets these flashes and he remembers everything? I just had one of those for Now You See Me Too. I feel like it's all downloaded back in my brain.
Yeah.
I think Robinhood just got booted to add space.
Oh, you know what I just remembered? Wanted. That's a movie I saw.
Oh, yeah.
But you see, now, I remember a lot of that movie, and I only saw it once back when it came out. I remember a lot of that.
Well, I'm starting to remember scenes now, like the Angelina Jolie back tattoo and all the other stuff. But
she does like a split on a train.
Yeah. I just, I don't know. I totally forgot I watched the movie. So... Yeah, yeah. It was a decent action movie, you know?
Yeah. I feel like decent action movies are the most forgettable.
Yeah, because, like, action movies, you got to go for broke. Like, you don't want to end up in the middle. Like, that's just, like, whoa. I want action movies to be either really bad or really good. I don't want it to be in between.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, that's interesting, because sometimes there's in-between comedies, and I'm totally fine with those in the background.
Yeah, yeah.
But an in-between action film?
What's the point?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man on a ledge.
So what's the answer to this question? Like, what was even the question in the first place? Like, what movies have we
forgotten? Have you forgotten about almost immediately after watching?
Yeah. I think Mila Kunis. or roller skating Channing Tatum.
Wealthy intergalactic queen housemaid.
It doesn't sound like you guys forgot about that movie. It sounds like you guys remembered a lot.
I could sit around a campfire right now and tell everybody that film beat for beat.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. It would be like in Reign of Fire when they're acting out Star Wars. Like, Mark and I could do that. In the apocalypse, like, Mark and I are the two patriarchs of some little, like burnt down hamlet in a land of dragons. And we'll be, like, doing the voices and everything.
But you hit me in the balls, me lacunas.
But I love dogs.
The bees recognize royalty, Your Highness. They took my wings. They took my wings.
Hey, Dad, I'm going to go to the grocery store. I'll see you never.
We need to do a podcast where we're just doing this movie all the way through. I'm in. 100th episode. A recording of what we remember from Jupiter Ascending. What do you think, Lesbeth?
Let's do it.
All right, so we're 100 up. Do you like that, Levin Good?
Yeah, so the rule will be, though, that, like, even from now on, we cannot watch any clips of that movie.
I'm okay.
Sounds
with that.
Good.
I'm
we can't okay read about the movie unless it's your own review, but we can jot down all the notes that we want.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
You know, I'm one step ahead of you.
So we will try and act out Jupiter Ascending to the best of our ability, spotting each other in our absences, yeah?
Yeah.
Sure. 100th
episode.
Yeah.
I like it. No, I mean, we're already at episode 83, so, I mean, it's not that far away.
This is going to be fun.
I mean, you guys are going to want to tune in. I guess this is going to – it would come out, like, in February or March or so. Like, you guys got to watch out for our 100th episode where it's Hoffmeyer and Levin Goods, Jupiter Ascending.
Oh, man.
Oh, terrible. Yeah.
I guess we got to split up characters.
Maybe we should be allowed to watch it again.
No.
I guess it doesn't hurt anything.
No. Don't watch it.
Don't watch it again?
How about we can't watch it 2 weeks within the time frame?
So, I mean, it's not like I'm dying to watch it again right now anyway. So
I'm not going to watch it again.
So we got to split up we got to put characters in a hat and the three of us will draw them out.
But do you want to do that? Or is that how you want? Or do you just want to just like start? We'll just start ad libbing along as we go. And when one person slows down, like we just start helping each other along. Or
No matter how we do,
this is going to be fun.
I said we just ad lib. No need to assign characters.
Sounds
right.
Good.
Because Lazavath is an improv expert.
That's right. So we'll just ad lib the movie.
Yes, yes.
But, I mean, you can jot down notes. So if you want to, like, really focus on a couple characters, Mark, like, that can only help it along. Because if I saw you owning a character, like, I'd back off and I'd start thinking, like, oh, shit, that's right. There was a lizard man around while he was doing his Eddie Redmayne monologue. And I'll be like, lug, lug, needlessly big wings.
Leather jacket. It's going to get – I like it. 100th episode.
So I have not drank any alcohol today, people.
Nope, me neither.
This is a sober thought.
I'm not Tom Petty in this. I will not back down.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to Tom Petty it and not back down.
Folks, this is how podcasting magic happens. You're witnessing it.
Never stop stopping.
All right, Mark, what's the second question?
This one is from Danny again, because I gave him two more because I forgot his first one. He said, whose jaws have stronger PSI, the small jaw set in the standard hungry alien xenomorph, or Tom Iceman Kavansky immediately after a maverick smartass remark in Top Gun? So does the xenomorph, that little mouth that pops out, have a stronger bite strength? Or does Iceman, when he does that with his gum, and he you can really see that in Top Gun where he chomps down. Like, he really shows off those jowls. So what do you guys think? Who has a stronger PSI?
I got a real answer, though. So, that little alien chomper, right? Like, if that bites you, it will rip a chunk out of your flesh. Or even if it nipped you, you're going to need stitches. It's going to be bad. But the thing is that it's bad because it's small. Like, it can do that. Like, it's pounds per square inch aren't going to be big. If you punch a wall, Mark, you will generate more pounds of force than a bullet from a Glock. The thing, but it's just that a bullet affects a much smaller area, so its effect is more devastating. So I'm going to say that I thought, is it Kazanaki?
Iceman.
I'm going to say the Iceman with that. And he's got like this Dolph Lundgren Jr., like this Ivan Drago's nephew of a jaw on him. I'll bet that he's going to generate the more pounds per square inch.
Yeah, this is what I think. So, you know those machines that flatten pennies and they like do the commemorative things on them?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think if you gave a penny to Kazanski, if you gave a penny to that little alien mouth in Iceman and you told him to chew on it, I think it would be a lot flatter from Iceman.
I think that alien is going to have worn down teeth, and I think that Kazanski is going to have a worn down penny.
Yep. Yeah, I think this way he like bites down on them teeth. I think he's going to be crushing some. And you know the little alien xenomorph, it kind of opens its mouth really wide and goes. Kazanski just kind of does like a like he does a mini thing. He doesn't open his mouth all the way up. He'll chew his gum a little bit, but when he bites down, it's only from like a few centimeters. Like he would, if he had a popsicle stick in his mouth, that thing would splinter.
Ooh.
Lassabeth, where do you weigh in this heated physics debate?
Let's see. I'm just imagining like the alien and the Iceman to stare off, and they're just like kind of chomping their jaws at each other, trying to establish dominance in the as far as jaw strength goes. I just, for some reason, I see Iceman coming out on top. Like, he's just, like, super stubborn. You yeah. know? Like, he
like
just...
Just to win that, he would crack his own tooth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He would. While wearing, like, those aviators.
Yeah. And the aviators would be, like, covering his tears.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole time.
The vibrations from his cracked tooth would actually crack the lens.
Yeah.
The whole time Iceman's making like really deep eye contact and just like leaning forward the whole time. It's like, what are you going to do, alien?
Yeah. I think Iceman's got it. I think he has more PSI.
Yeah. Sure.
That penny's going to be flat.
Yeah. Oh, man.
And it's going to be, I'll be your wingman. He somehow manages to type that into the penny.
You know what's funny is that like Iceman.
Yeah, he just
uses
his molars to etch it out.
And there's a picture of him playing volleyball.
He actually changes Lincoln so that the words around it, like instead of Liberty and all that, that's where it says it. He yep. reshapes the letters at the perimeter of the penny to say, bullshit, you can be mine.
Yeah.
And knowing Iceman, he'll probably just keep the penny.
Yeah.
Thanks, bro. And walks away.
Heads up is for winners.
I just lost a penny.
Hey. He always does that to me.
Shit. I think I gotta learn my lesson by now. All right, so I think the answer is don't give a penny to Iceman.
Don't do it.
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
You'll never see it again. Ever.
Never.
All right. Thanks to Danny for those wonderful listener questions. I think he has another one, right, coming up. Coming up later. All right, Mark, what's the topic for us this week?
So some people do the best films. Some people do the best screenplays. Some people do best animated feature, best foreign feature. We here at MFF do the best non-human characters of 2016. Now, this list, you know, you don't see this. I did this last year and a lot of people liked it. So I'm like, well, you know what? Let's bring it back for the podcast. Let's do the best non-human characters of 2016. So that means it's a really broad spectrum, just basically as long as there's no humans.
Well, and I think a little bit of liberty occasionally is taken with the word character.
Yeah.
But that's okay, I think, because sometimes really like an object plays a significant role.
The best non-human character slash thing. Object. Well, I guess there's a non-human object.
See, we're just going in a wormhole here. The best non-human character of 2016.
Best non-human characters.
A wormhole is also a non-human character.
Who was?
A wormhole is also.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of wormholes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Wormhole, black hole.
But it should be fair to point out that, like, people right now, they're probably thinking, oh, Groot. It's like, no, it can't be too human-like. We're not doing human-like or humanoids.
No, Groot would work.
Groot would, no, yeah, no way. Yeah, Groot's a tree.
Yeah, he's a tree.
That means you could have Drax and you could have Gamora.
Yeah, see, that's too easy.
Yeah, like, you can have too many things.
I mean, like, I kind of... All right, so here's what we're going to do. I'm going to start us off. Is that cool, Lazbeth?
Sure.
And so the first one for me is the scissor lift from Arrival.
Oh, nice.
So in
the
movie...
Explain what that is for people.
Yes. Okay, so a scissor lift, it's a four-wheeled vehicle that... So let's say you are in a warehouse, right? And you need to get... You're in Costco, Sam's Club. BJ's Wholesale, all right? And you need to get up high to get another 72-inch TV. You step into the scissor lift, and it opens up. So when it's fully open, you see a bunch of X going through, and you can get 3-4 people. The really big ones, you can get 6 or 7. So the scissor lift basically just takes you straight up in the air. It's not like you're not in a bucket like the people who fix the power lines. It's just a scissor lift that shoots you straight up in the air.
So that I understand, Mark, would it be fair to say that on their way to the alien site, Forrest Whitaker and his men stopped at a Home Depot and commandeered in the name of the president a scissor lift?
Yes, or they're renting it from Hertz.
Okay.
But for me, so the Arrival, right, these 12 alien ships land. However, these ships are probably 24 feet off of the ground. So, like, you can't, like, unless you have a monster truck, you know, a ladder is not going to work. You know, like you, like, I mean, a bucket thing that takes one person at a time, it's slow. The scissor lift, right? It wheels under perfectly the hole that's open to get in a spaceship, and then it lifts them up the 20 some odd feet perfectly with all of them and their gear, one trip. Like, let's say the spaceship moves a little bit, you can move the scissor lift. This scissor lift was integral to our people learning stuff. I don't want to give too much away.
Right.
So without this scissor lift, like, could you imagine Amy Adams in that huge suit climbing up a ladder trying to jump in that thing?
It would take her forever.
Like, yeah, or like kind of in like mountain climbing gear or something.
Can you picture Jeremy Renner on a trampoline trying to jump in there?
Actually, I can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you could catapult people, but that's a little messy.
Yeah.
I mean, this scissor lift is the MVP. It's the blue collar MVP of Arrival.
Is it just me, or was that entrance in the shell, they called it, in that spaceship, was surprisingly commensurate with the size, the dimensions of the scissor lift?
They had to rent about 7 of them.
They picked the appropriate scissor lift.
Okay. I mean, they got one, but only they got one, but only 2 people went in, and it was too short.
Like, scissors lift RS is a very, very like
originally like 14 alien ships came, and when they started using scissor lifts that were too big and it pushed them, it just destroyed the whole ship.
You can't over scissor lift, you know, and a condor is too big. You know, like, I just, without these scissor lifts, we would have had either trampolines, ladders, or monster trucks. And that sounds pretty great.
By the way, when you sent me the notes and I saw a scissor lift, I mean, I knew what it was because I saw the movie and that made sense to me. But if we were just having a conversation and there was no context and you said, hey, John, name a movie that has a scissor lift that was integral to the plot. I just sit there and like, I could not come to grips with what a scissor lift was. Like, I would never figure out. If you gave me 100 guesses, I wouldn't guess what a scissor lift was. Like, I'd just be like, I just pick up the scissors. I don't know why we need a scissor lift.
Well, now after Arrival, the world is hip to scissor lifts.
You know what's funny is that, like, before I saw the movie, if you said the word scissor lift to me, I would think, is that some type of special gadget for lifting up scissors? Like,
yep.
It just seems like a very, very trivial and redundant kind of thing. But it's actually like a, it's actually a big lift. I didn't know that.
It's a nice little lift. On my film sets when I work in studio, they're cruising all over the place. So I guess I'm familiar with scissor lifts. And also, that scissor lift probably helped them with gear and everything as well. So not only was it meant for the film, but it also probably helped rig up lights.
So, like,
and the scissor lift was good for building tension, right? You know, yeah. Their first entry, it moves slowly. So, like, you're kind of nervous with them getting anxious about it. And there's a time in the movie where time is more important. And we know that. And, you know, again, that scissor lift is kind of the vessel for us to get nervous.
That's right. It moves up nice and slow. So I'm telling you, MVP, best supporting scissor lift. Make it happen, associate producer.
There you go. There you go. All right. My turn, I guess. Okay. I don't really have these in any particular order. I didn't want to take the time to measure them out on the scales to see which one was marginally better or worse. But, yeah, just building off of Mark's selection, I went with the heptapods in Arrival. I think they were sufficiently non-human enough, you know. They were just kind of floating there, and they looked like floating octopuses. Like, I don't know if you guys ever watched Squidbillies on Adult Swim, but they kind of reminded me of them, but without the trucker hats and empty beer cans, you know.
That's for their long trips. They probably were wearing that on the way to Earth.
Yeah. No, it was – I really loved the way Arrival, like, presented the aliens. Like, it was – it wasn't, like, totally up front, but they made, like, there was, like, a big impact. Like, just the way they moved, it was very slow, and, like, the way they did, like, their little smoke communication thing. It was just really cool to watch.
Abbott and Costello.
But, you know, what else I loved about them is that when they introduced the aliens, it's like Forrest Whitaker basically just saying that they're going to be there. And we don't make a big deal about what the aliens look like or specifically where they might have come from. It's all about the communication, right? So they only bring up almost in passing, like during a narrative montage later, like we call them heptapods because of this, that, and the other. And, you know, like it was just – I like that they weren't making the biggest deal about, oh, it has tentacles, it has 89 legs. Like no one was – freaking out about that in the movie, which is what happens in every alien movie ever. There is some kind of just word vomit about their appearance.
You know what I love is that, like, the majority of the movie, like, they're just kind of shrouded in that fog or whatever in their spaceships. You never get, like, a clear picture of them. You know, maybe, like, towards, like, the end of the movie in that one like, a really pivotal scene. But even then, like, you know, it's like you never get a sense like you're looking at the whole picture. Like it's just like, well, yeah, they're very alien looking, and it's just, yeah, you feel like there's just kind of more, but you don't really want to see more.
And I just want to hug them.
Yeah, they're kind of, you know, they grow on you over time.
Like I just want to hug them. They're just nice. And next week we'll talk. We'll give the full spoilers. But there's a scene where tear.
Yeah.
I have to put on some aviators and pull a top gun and hide my tears thinking about it. But
just bite a penny to fight the tears off.
That's right. No, I love these heptapods. They're, oh gosh, I love Arrival. It's so good.
It was so good.
Would they appreciate the scissor lift technology?
I mean, they don't really need it. They just kind of float, right? Like,
yeah.
I think they would appreciate the ingenuity of it.
Yeah, they're like, so it's. It's not used to pick up scissors? No. Imagine them having the conversation and they're shooting those circular things. The world's on the line and they're like, so what's a scissor lift?
This whole time, they just want to know what a scissor lift was.
It's like, so you don't lift scissors with it? And, you know, Amy Adams and Renner are just like, no. Like, but couldn't it lift scissors? And they say yes. And they're like, aha.
Well, technically, it could lift a whole lot of scissors.
I mean, it could literally be a scissor lift.
Yeah,
as well.
I'm like, thanks a lot, Abbott.
Then they disappear.
Yeah.
Thanks for answering our question.
Abbott is always such a smart ass. He takes it so literally.
Yeah.
They're a good duo. You know, they're a good duo.
All right, so we have two arrivals. So my next one is Steven Seagal from The Shallows. Have either of you watched The Shallows?
So, no. And I hadn't even seen, paid close attention to a trailer or read anything about it until you would inform me of this pick. And now I cannot explain how excited I am to eventually see The Shallows.
Yeah, there's an article about Steven Seagal on Vulture. They put out, like, the best character of the summer, Steven Seagal. And here's what happens. There's this dead whale, right? And Steven's on top of it just going, this is awesome. I got a free whale. I'm munching. I'm crunching. You know, I'm bunching. And then Blake Lively shows up, sees the whale, gets attacked by a shark, gets on the whale. The whale gets whapped. And then Blake Lively and Steven end up on this rock. And little Steven Seagal can't fly. His acting name is actually Sully. So he can't fly. And so he's stranded on the rock with Blake. But his reactions are perfect. I hear he was great to work with on set. I hear he's a real professional.
And this is a real Seagull.
Yeah, because he didn't want an animatronic because they break down so easy. And then he didn't want it CGI because that'd be too expensive. So they had a Seagull that already had a bum wing and a sanctuary. And he said in the article, he said he's like the Marlon Brando of Seagulls. He just knew when to look at the camera.
So what's his basis for comparison? I mean, I'm not disagreeing that, like, I'm very excited to see the Seagull, but I mean, are there a lot of Seagull actors to compare to? I mean, there's a CGI Seagulls in Finding Nemo, the ones that mine. Yeah. They're jerks. I don't like them.
Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, right? Don't they push a bunch of seagulls? I know he kills a bunch of seagulls.
They had it coming, though.
Oh, yeah. There's some seagulls there, yeah.
And Hot Shots Part 2, there's a line where he's like, I see a couple gulls. I don't know if there's much of a basis for this, but I do think that once more seagulls start getting work in Hollywood, people are going to consider Sully to be the Marlon Brando.
I wonder if Sully, like, has an animal actor agent now.
There are animal actor agents. So I think he's just chilling, getting royalties right now. I think he's happy.
Like, he's eating, like, some very rare crab meat.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he's getting blue crab right now.
Mm. Yeah, no more of that fiddler crab crap.
Yeah, and once you watch the movie, you will see something very pleasant. So that's Steven Seagal. So who do you got, Laz? Who's your next one?
Okay, the next one I got is Baloo from The Jungle Book, the modern-day live-action kind of remake of the animated movie. And Baloo this time around is voiced by Bill Murray. And I can't think of a perfect pairing of voice actor and character for Baloo. It's just Baloo is like kind of like this lazy, kind of sardonic but lovable bear, and that just describes Bill Murray to a T.
The good thing about this bear character is, like, Bill Murray's like my spirit animal, but if I tried to, like, sleep on top of him, like, it would be really uncomfortable. But as a bear, you know, you could just use him as a pillow and it's normal.
I just love, like, in the movie, like, Baloo is just using the kid to get the honey.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm getting stung up here, like, that's normal.
Yeah.
Like, he was just so lazy. It was awesome.
And then he, like, goes for a pretty good run. He has some cardio.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, you know what? He's actually, like, a good bear in the end. Because, like, he's, like, a big, you know, lumbering kind of carnivore. But he never once thinks about eating the kid. He's all about the honey.
Yeah.
You know? I think there's something very admirable about that.
And he doesn't phone it in, Bill Murray. You could tell he likes being this bear.
Unlike Garfield.
Yeah, oh gosh. Yeah, like on Zombieland?
Yeah.
If he could erase one movie, maybe Garfield.
Yeah. I kind of like how the animators made Baloo's face. It reminded me of Bill Murray's face a little bit when they did close-up shots of Baloo on Baloo. And it's just like, well, that kind of looks like Bill Murray a little bit, but in bear form, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was The Jungle Book was a very enjoyable movie, and Baloo, you know, Baloo is one of the major characters in the original Jungle Book. So I think they. I think Bill Murray really nailed it, actually. Because the original. Go ahead.
Didn't he rescue the boy from the snake?
From Scarlett Johansson's Anaconda.
Yeah, so he fought a giant snake.
Yeah. He's a, listen, Baloo's not a scaredy cat. He's just a big bear.
Right. He's just chill.
Yeah.
But when he has to fight, he's a giant bear.
Yeah, yeah. All right, actually now would be a good time to take a break. I might go get some honey.
I'm gonna go use my scissor lift outside.
Yeah. We'll be back in a little bit.
Hey, podcast listeners, this is Kyle from Word of the Bay.
And Nick.
And we're here to talk to you about Word of the Bay.
Yeah, Word of the Bay.
Yeah.
What is Word of the Bay?
Well, God, it's a Tampa Bay sports podcast. What is Tampa Bay?
Tampa Bay is the Tampa area. St. Pete, Tampa, Clearwater.
So we talk about sports and other things.
Which include Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Tampa Bay Lightning, and Tampa Bay Rays.
And another bay, which is slipping my mind.
Oh, I don't even know what that bay is.
Hey, guys, what are you guys talking about?
Oh, Jonathan, this is our third host, Jonathan.
Well, did I just walk in on something?
No, you're fine. But if you want to listen to Word of the Bay, go ahead and go to www.sharkdropper.com
and check us out. Yeah.
Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. So getting the honey didn't work out all that well because I don't like getting stung.
And you didn't have a scissor lift.
Hey, you know, that kid would have made really good use of that scissor lift in the Jungle Book. Wow, that's crazy.
And bees are terrible, though.
Yeah, they are. They are.
I mean, like, not like as people or as animals, but just, you know.
They're just jerks.
Yeah. Really. Yeah.
Well, no, I was about to say, speaking of jerks, well, that's actually kind of mean to Danny.
Yeah, no, you met Danny.
Yeah, I don't want to be mean to him.
You met him at
Speaking of jerks, why don't we answer his listener question?
Guys. Yeah. Oh, and speak of the devil. Sorry, Laz. I just remember this. You're in attempt 318, which is attached to this clip. You're in there.
Am I?
Yeah, you're Rick Stevens.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. That's a movie I forgot about. And I was in it.
So the question he has is, who would Sean Connery opt for, Leeloo or River Song from Doctor Who for Entrapment 2 Space Heist? And or who would you guys pick? So, you know, Entrapment was basically all Catherine Zeta-Jones wiggling underneath stuff. So who would be better? I don't know if you guys watch Doctor Who, but River Song, Alex Kingston, Leeloo?
Wouldn't you just have to go with Leeloo by default? Because I don't think River's all that flexible, right?
Yeah, I think it would have to. Yeah, I mean, I don't think River is. She's like a doctor. She's like a...
I mean, she would be valuable in other ways.
She's in the action, but...
Yeah, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. She has, like, a time travel device.
Yeah. I just feel like Sean Connery, like... No, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right. I think Sean Connery would document Lilo.
Yeah.
Lilo. I sound like Dr. Evil there.
Yeah.
I mean, the montages, the, like, thieving practice montages would be great with Leeloo. So they would probably just, for commercial reasons and theatrical reasons and trailer reasons, use Leeloo.
See, you know, for Leeloo, though, like, you know the Catherine Zeta-Jones laser thing where she goes through all lasers? Like, that kind of – that was – I feel like that whole movie was built around that one trailer moment idea.
Yep.
But so – like, if Leeloo did that, it would be more like Vincent Cassell in Ocean's 12 doing the capoeira around the lasers. Like, she'd be like, she couldn't be so careful. Like, that's just not Leeloo.
She would walk through it.
She'd do the crazy version of it.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like, all the flips.
But, like, when Ving Rhames is given advice about dress size and stuff and having her, like, be subtle and sneaky – I feel like Leeloo will add, like, the fun element to us, the viewer,
but would stress the hell out of Sean Connery. He's like, she's going to blow this.
What is she doing?
She's just, multi-pass. Like, she's just going around being, like, crazy and zany and cute and drawing all this attention to herself.
Yeah, and if he tried to do the Sean Connery arm grab, she would just beat the crap out of him.
Oh, dude, I mean, has she watched the Kung Fu videos? Then, yeah, she's going to be... If she hasn't gotten the letter K yet, he might be safe.
Yeah.
But then there's... I mean, but then again, she could have had... Aikido, like maybe I'm just thinking it was just all about the kung fu. Like,
jiu-jitsu, she just gets him in a leg lock or an like arm bar.
M for martial arts and B for Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And like she maybe she just knew them all anyway.
Yeah, B for boxing or ball kick.
B for ball kick. But
great Scott.
But I've got to go Lulu just because I don't know who River Song is. Like, I don't even know what this person looks like.
Ouch. She's, like, kind of the opposite of Lulu.
Yeah. But she's still the like, best.
So she looks like Russell Crowe.
No.
The opposite of Lulu.
I love Doctor Who, so I'd rather have her in it because this would be tough. I'd rather have – wait. I think River Song would be a great, like, mentor for Lulu.
That's you're advocating getting both. That's cheating.
Okay. Well, yeah. I'll go Lulu.
Okay.
Since it's just bottom line.
Bork's like, all right.
I'm thinking trailer moments.
Oh, yeah. I'm thinking like who Sean Connery will want to see. Just kind of wiggling around, you know. I feel like that's like 90% of the reason why he did Entrapment. Little yeah. Catherine Zeta-Jones, huh? She's going to be in a skin-tight suit.
All right. Just I'm sold.
Whittling around.
Wait, where is he saying this?
He's in his bathroom. Just talking to his agent on the phone.
Shaving his chest hair.
Yeah. Takes him, like, till 3 o'clock in the afternoon to get it all bare.
Wait, what do you mean I don't have to shave? Yeah.
Is that the final answer? It takes Sean Connery till 3 o'clock in the afternoon to get done shaving his chest hair.
Yeah, and by then he already has like the what do you call it, the stubble? Yeah.
Like the 5 o'clock shadow before he started shaving.
Yeah.
Every morning like it's growing back and he has to start over again.
Ugh.
Oh, man. No wonder he's retired from acting.
That's right. That's what he has to do all day.
Yeah.
He probably has laser done.
Sure. Yeah, he could afford it.
So you think, like, if the Bond villain was trying to, like, laser him to death, he's like, just get my back hair first.
It would take that kind of laser, though. Like, it would take, like, the laser that was meant to destroy the moon to LASIK or whatever. Not LASIK. To electrolyze his hair follicles. It's like cutting diamonds, man.
That's right.
All right. Yeah. Thank you to Danny for all three of those wonderful listener questions. Next time you leave Mark a drunk voicemail, just assume that neither of you are going to remember what the hell you just said. So,
yeah.
Text
it to me. Text it.
Just put it on like a post-it note or something.
Ooh.
If you can remember that. All right, Mark. I think we're still continuing with the best non-human characters of 2016.
That's right. And so mine is the next one is Flash the Sloth from Zootopia. And normally I'm anti-sloth. All right. I think that they're lulling us into certain death. I think they're here right now for a scouting party.
It's all an act.
Yeah. I think they're scouting right now. I think millions of years of scouting. And they are coming in from another dimension just figuring out our weaknesses.
So you're mixing Signs with Pacific Rim, where in Signs they're doing the probing right now.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely probing. However,
and then a kaiju sloth will come and level our cities.
Yeah, and like I think that's going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen for a couple million years, but it's going to happen. You know, it's inevitable. However, Zootopia has a really nice sloth named Flash who works at the DMV, and what I like most, like, I got really annoyed because Judy Hopps was yelling at him to hurry up. And I'm like, you guys already cut the line.
Like, Flash wasn't even, like, on duty. And he's, like, doing you guys a favor, going the fast he can, enjoying some good jokes. He's having a good time. And you're yelling at him. Like, I understand Judy was in a time crunch, but Flash was doing his best.
Hmm. Yeah. And plus, like, he also had, like, a sense of humor.
Yeah.
You know, he was, listening to, what's his name? The Fox's joke. I forget his name was.
Oh, gosh. Bateman.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, he was just, like, totally into the joke. Even though it took him a while to get it.
Yeah, and, like he got it. Like, he really enjoyed that joke. Right?
Yeah.
Like, and, you know, he's, like, at work. They already cut the line. I just think when Judy was yelling at him, I was getting annoyed. And my wife was like, Mark, like, she's in a hurry. I'm like, yeah, but you don't yell at Flash like that. You could yell at Sid the Sloth from Ice Age like that, but you can't yell at Flash. Hmm. And you know what? Him speeding at the end, because he's a speeder in the car, that just proves my theory correct. Sloths know what they're doing, and they like to move fast.
I have kind of this fan theory that Flash the Sloth was the same sloth that killed everybody in the elevator in Devil.
And, like, yeah.
Like, you didn't see him because he's sneaky.
Like, I think the devil was in there, and the devil just kept going, what the hell? You know what I mean? Like,
the devil was using the sloths.
Ooh.
Sloth is derived from ancient Sumerian language for hand of the devil.
And I think they escaped, though, and now the devil's like, come on, guys. And they're like, get away from us. And so they just mess with him now. I believe it.
You gotta watch out for those sloths.
Like, and they drive fast. They kill people in elevators.
And Rosemary's Baby, everyone was freaking out because they knew she was going to give birth to a sloth.
Yep, a sloth demon.
That's redundant, Mark.
Yeah, you're right. Sloth spelled backwards is demon.
It's an anagram. it's a bananagram. No, but I love Flash. I agree. He's a very lovable character. That movie's filled with lovable characters, but he's the trailer moment that totally lives up to your expectations. Except it was longer in the movie, which was wonderful.
He's just nice, and he let people cut the line.
Three Haas.
Yep, he did his civic duty, and that jerk Judy Hopps just yelled at him. I don't like it. Hmm. All right, what do you got, Laz? Get me out of this funk.
So I'm going to go back to the summer. The big Marvel kind of tentpole movie this summer was Civil War, the third Captain America movie. And for me, the non-human object that I'm kind of focusing on from that movie is not the Vision, because you can argue that he's kind of non-human, but I'm going with the Vision sweater.
Oh, my gosh. What a...
It was just I just want to let's just think about it for a second. The Vision as a character, he's kind of like this all powerful being that's powered by one of the Infinity Stones, and he's basically a god. You know, he's very godlike. I just think it's hilarious that he would need to wear a sweater.
Right, you know, when he was making what was he trying to cook, Mark? Do you remember? With the paprika that he needed, what was he trying to make?
Was it like gumbo or something like that?
No. Yeah, gumbo or a curry or something.
So whatever he was trying to make, if I understood what he was doing, right, and he's trying to handle the Scarlet Witch and keep her there and distracted and everything. Now, if he was just in regular Vision garb, I would have just been like arms crossed, brow furrowed, just pissed off at the screen, like, this is so stupid. You put him in that cardigan or whatever, and I bought it all. Like, that made that work. It didn't augment something that was already good. It made it work, period.
Yeah. Like, he just sort of looked like a Cary Grant sophisticated dude.
No, I mean, you know, I don't want people to get it wrong. I really did think he pulled off the sweater. Like, it looked really good on him. You know, Like, he really owned it, too. Like, he was just, like, really lounging in his chair and just, like, he looked very comfortable in that sweater, you know.
And apparently, if you look close enough, he's wearing an ascot underneath his shirt. Oh, like, he was really doing it up. Yeah, so he had the nice buttoned-up shirt, the sweater, the slacks. Like, does the Vision go to the tailor? Does he already know his measurements? So, like, let's say, like, a guy's like, hey, I need to get your measurements. The Vision's like, I know. Right. Can the Vision put on weight?
If he wanted to, yeah.
Hmm. Like, does he just stare at a bunch of caterpillars and telekinetically harvest silk in the air and make his clothes?
Ooh.
Is there another outfit that you maybe see the Vision wearing? Or is that sweater spun out of air by nothing perfect for him? I don't see him wearing a leather jacket. I don't see him wearing an AC/DC shirt. I don't see him wearing a sweater vest.
I really don't even like his regular, like, Vision outfit.
Well, yeah, like that green and red thing and that yellow cape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I never liked that. But that cardigan, that suits him.
Like, jeans wouldn't work.
You know, I bet you he could make jeans work.
You think he could do it?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how, but he would need a sweater,
right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, I mean, have sweater and jeans ever looked good together? I don't know.
I think so. What about a Henley? Could he pull off a Henley?
Now, a Henley and jeans, that's a pretty good combo.
Yeah, I think the Vision would be a Vision in a Henley and jeans.
Are we still talking about movies?
A V-neck?
Yeah. A V-neck Henley.
Ooh.
Those things exist.
Yeah. I think that's what our what Henleys are.
No, Henleys are just like it doesn't have to have a V-neck. I'm not a Henley expert.
Henley has like the two buttons, the two or three buttons. Yes.
And it's got that front pocket. Yeah. Right.
Not all of them.
Oh. Well, they have long sleeves a lot of time, right?
Like, oh yeah. I'm not into the short sleeve Henley.
A short sleeve Henry. That's like the Henley. That's like the redneck of style. That's like the Hank.
Wait, who's short sleeve Henry?
The short sleeve Henley. Sounds like Hank.
Sounds like we got a new character for the podcast. Short sleeve Henry.
Henley.
There's like hardcore Henry.
Is there a sleeveless
hardcore
Henley?
Hardcore Henley. It's like a Henley covered in blood splatter.
All right, Mark, so, what's your next pick?
Yeah, so you guys aren't going to believe it, but 2016 has been the year of the mustache. But the best mustache of all is Aaron Eckhart's mustache in Sully. I feel like if all the mustaches separated from people's faces and had a brawl, his mustache would eat all the other mustaches. I'm talking about the mustaches in, you know, Everybody Wants Some, Magnificent Seven, Hell or High Water, Deepwater Horizon, Tarzan, Infiltrator, Fantastic Beasts, Eddie the Eagle, Hail Caesar. We're talking Mr. Church. We're talking Nice Guys, Birth of a Nation, Do-Over, United Kingdom, Masterminds, Jane's Got a Gun. We have Rogue One, Neon Demon, War for Magnificent Seven, and then there's the Siege of Jadotville. There's a lot of mustaches in 2016. But if you Google a picture right now, Aaron Eckhart mustache, Sully. I mean, apparently people are coming, like, he's getting tons of compliments, but people are doing it like in secret. Like, Aaron Eckhart said a lot of women come up to him and they go, hey, I like your mustache. Like, they don't want to admit it, like, out loud, which is kind of interesting. But that mustache, I would, you know, Kurt Russell has a great mustache in Deepwater Horizon, but I'm giving Eckhart the edge. That thing is powerful.
Yeah, I'm a little disappointed. I feel like his mustache was asleep at the wheel in Sully.
Wait, have you seen it?
No, I saw the trailer. That's all I had to see.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Because that mustache did not do a damn thing to save that plane. It was all on Hanks.
Well, Hanks was the pilot.
Yeah, but I mean, that mustache could have attached and flapped and attached to the wing.
But that's what happened. You only saw the trailer. So you're making assumptions from a trailer.
That's fair.
His mustache jumped off his face, right? Fixed the engine and allowed them time to land on the water.
Okay.
And then jump back on his face. And then release.
Does it hurt when it detaches?
No, no, no. It's not like duct tape. And it's like a separate entity on there. It just kind of hangs out. And then it release all the life rafts. And then people use it as a paddle to get back to shore. So, I mean, yeah. And then it did all the fundraising for the families. Sully. Have you guys seen Sully?
I haven't.
You saw Sully?
No, I haven't.
Oh, okay. But guys, Sully, loved it. Mustache. Brilliant.
Well, doesn't Tom Hanks have a mustache in that movie too?
Yeah, it's strong. It's strong, but it's not Aaron Eckhart strong. Like, I don't understand how Eckhart just grew that thing. I don't understand the logistics of it.
I feel like that was grown in a lab and then grafted onto him.
It had to have. Like, you know how like Hemsworth and Ryan Reynolds have to like, you know, have this crazy workout with like all these different like, you know, aspects and food and diets and like all these workouts. I feel like they did that for this mustache. I think there was gel in it. I think they brought in Vidal Sassoon to cut it.
Well, I've seen Aaron Eckhart like with like scruff in movies. Like, I would never believe for a second that if he was to let that scruff grow and cut around it, he would end up with that mustache.
I feel like everyone was pleasantly surprised. You know, like, how much can you know about yourself if you've never tried to grow a mustache?
I gotta tell you, and what is with, like, pilots and mustaches?
I know that I can't grow a mustache.
Like... What's up?
I know I can't grow a mustache.
grow a mustache. You're all mutton chops.
No, yeah.
I think it's just a pilot thing.
Like, yeah, pilots... Police, firemen, I want to say. Drill sergeants, maybe.
Yeah. Accountants.
Who's the accountant you got in mind?
Math teachers. Oh, no. I know an accountant that has a beautiful mustache. I don't want to say his name, but he worked at Wizard World.
Oh, nice.
Amazing guy. Great man. Great man. Yeah,
that's right.
Stan, you're the best, and your mustache... gives you power. So yeah, I think. But yeah, so that's all right. So what's your next one, Laz?
So next one is probably from one of my favorite movies of the year. I think this non-human character, his appearance is kind of jarring because the movie it's not like totally like a surreal. It's basically just pretty grounded. But like when this scene happened, it was just like wow. What's going on here? But the movie I'm talking about is The Nice Guys, and it's the scene where Ryan Gosling is kind of asleep, hallucinating, and like he just all of a sudden sees like this huge bee sitting in like in his back seat, just smoking a cigarette.
So weird, yeah. And trippy, and cool.
I think I remember the bee like complaining about like the fog in LA and like how he can't fly anymore. He has to like hitchhike or something just so he can avoid the smog in the air. I'm just like, wow, what is going on?
Man, I watched that movie. I don't remember this scene. I just had to Google it.
Yeah. Oh, I know what you're talking about. I remember it. It was neat. It was funny. It harkens back, like, with how much it takes you off guard. It reminds me of Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
When he's, like, the what was it, little roach on the lawn chair of the miniature, of the miniature whorehouse in the miniature layout. Like, he's like, hey, how's it going? And it's just for a second, but it's... Like, those scenes are, like, weird, clever little things. Mm-hmm. That was totally out of left field in Nice Guys.
Yeah. Like, wow, I don't know what Shane Black's doing, but I'm enjoying it. You know? This bee's got a lot of character.
I like watching Ryan Gosling act opposite things that are in his head. Because I feel like he nails that. He had a lot of fun in Nice Guys.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I had a lot of fun watching him in Nice Guys, so.
I like that he thought he was immortal.
Oh, yeah, because, like, he would never get hit or something like that.
he kept like, not getting injured.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know what? You gave me an excuse to watch the Nice Guys again.
You should always have an excuse to watch the Nice Guys again.
Actually, everyone should watch the Nice Guys.
It's a great movie.
You know what? Just send it, just drop pallets down. With the Blu-ray.
Yeah, yeah. Seriously, if we buy enough of the Blu-rays, maybe they'll make a sequel.
All right, guys. All of our podcast listeners, buy 12 each.
Please.
In case you want to watch it more than once.
Yeah. I feel like we should be negotiating something with the distributors so that we get a little cut of this.
Yeah, that's right. Make us associate producers of the sequel.
Sure.
All right, so my next one is so there's a movie out called Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, and it's loaded with these really cute tree bugs and yeti sloth creatures and adorable creatures, and they teach you how to find them. But my favorite non-human character from this movie is the pastry suitcase that Dan Fogler's character carries around. So basically, he shows up to this meeting to get funding for his bakery, and he opens up a suitcase, and it's like six different sections of pastries just waiting to be eaten.
That sounds very convenient.
Yeah.
Now, I haven't seen this movie. And this is in the Harry Potter world, right?
Yeah.
So is it that the suitcase magically manifests the pastries, or does the suitcase just serve as a magical extra-dimensional space to store a lot of real pastries?
No, he has no magic.
But the case, I mean, though, is
no.
The case.
It's just a nice suitcase, and it's the home to some delicious pastries.
Wait, you mean so this is how the pastries that fit in it would normally fit in that suitcase in reality?
Yep, six different sections of glorious pastries.
He's just like diabetes waiting to happen is what you're saying.
No, he's trying to promote his bakery. Okay. So he's like walking around to like, hey, taste this cannoli. You know, you're going to give me money.
I just want to follow him around all day.
But see, I don't want a pastry suitcase. I want a pastry briefcase so I can portion control.
Man, I mean,
I fit one of each.
I get where you're coming from, but like, I could put a serious hurting on that suitcase.
And these are homemade pastries. You know what I mean?
Not that store bought Edmonds crap, right?
not Edmonds. These are homemade pastries that you let cool down in a suitcase.
Right.
Suitcase pastries. Food of the future.
Honestly, you know how they do food trucks? It doesn't sound very delicious when described like that.
You know how they do
suitcase pastries?
There's going to be no more food trucks 5 years from now. It's going to be food suitcases.
It doesn't sound like a very bright future. You know?
I mean, it's a trend. It's a trend.
Okay.
But it'll happen. You put like a little hibachi in it, and like your ingredients, and you just make what you have, and when you sell out, you're done. It's like mobile cooking. You could do pop-up suitcase food days. Literally, because the suitcases will pop open.
All right. Sounds interesting.
I mean, you don't want to carry soup around in a suitcase.
So I'm just curious. So, like, did they use the pastries to lure the fantastic beasts that they have to find?
No. They just I don't think they ever get consumed. I think they're just left to get kind of stale.
That's kind of sad. I feel badly for those pastries now. I wish I was there to help Dan Fogler with his pastries. That's a very sympathetic non-human character then. I feel badly for it. It's not getting the attention it deserves.
And he made a lot of attention. Like, he put, like, remember on Bridesmaids when she makes that cake and then the raccoons eat it? I feel like he did the same thing.
Like, at least someone enjoyed that cake.
Yeah, but his pastries, he's going to open up that case when all the adventures are done. And he's going to be like, oh, crap.
Sure.
Like, it's going to be flaky. Well, you know, flaky. I mean, listen. It's a fad, okay? But you know what, though? Every movie, every generation, every decade has a fad. And I want food trucks. I want food suitcases to be the next big thing.
I mean, I'm down with a suitcase full of Krispy Kreme. Like, I'm on board with this idea, I think.
Like, and if you have a briefcase and you're walking around with it at, like, work, people are going to be like, man, John's putting in the hours. But you're just shoveling pastries in your face.
Yeah, usually I'll just put sandwiches
in there. Around with one filled with ribs.
Yep.
Have you been rifling through my suitcase, Loving Good? Yeah. How would you know that?
Yeah, John.
My suitcase.
Yeah, John has a briefcase. He just walks around with ribs in it. But no one ever knows because it's a briefcase. And you don't put ribs.
Ever since episode 70, he's walking around with that briefcase.
Yep. Who? No, you know, I wouldn't see it coming. You know what I mean? Sometimes there could be diamonds.
Yeah.
There could be paperwork,
calculators, but you never think barbecue ribs.
I know, because Lazabeth would have a smudge of barbecue sauce on his lip. If he's coming back from Canada and they're like, hey, is there any like perishables or like fruits and vegetables or meat? Like, nope, I just have a briefcase. And they're like, all right, come on through.
I just have a briefcase and my ribs.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, everyone's got their ribs, so that sounds good to me.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm telling you. Food briefcases.
Nice. Nice.
All right. What do you got, Laz?
All right. So my next one, I'm going with another Marvel movie, Doctor Strange, specifically his cape.
Of course.
Yeah. I feel like his cape really was the cape was just a total bro in this movie. You know, he protected, you know, Doctor Strange. He kind of prevented him from making the wrong choice. He's like, no, don't grab that. Grab like this weird body trap thing and put it on him. It was just like he was always looking out for him. You know, it was a. I feel like there's like it's the beginning of a bromance that we're seeing here between
like Aladdin and Carpet.
Yeah, yeah.
That cape wiped tears off of Doctor Strange's face.
Yeah, it's very sweet.
And you know what? You guys know I don't like wearing our T-shirts because you could get choked easily in them.
Yeah.
This cape, they designed it specifically so if someone pulled on the back of the cape, it couldn't choke them.
Yeah, because it just comes right off.
Yeah. So like, but it's not like tied around his neck. Like it kind of like latches on to like either side of his neck. So that cape cannot really be used to hurt Strange.
Yeah.
Like how many movies, remember on Incredibles, the cloaks, or I guess they call it a cloak, but all the capes in the Incredibles, it got people killed.
Yeah.
This cloak won't get him killed.
Like, if you're running through the streets, right, and you jump over a fence and your cape catches the fence.
Yep.
Like, I mean, there's so many ways that capes are not going to work out well.
Yep. Unless you're like a matador or Batman.
Or Spawn. But, of course, in Spawn's case, it's almost like an ectoplasmic extension of himself.
Yeah, so it's kind of – it's like akin to the Doctor Strange cloak.
Yeah, it just doesn't have the personality.
That's right.
Interesting.
I mean, but I think it's good. Like, I'd like to see it like in a dance club, like pulling him all over the place. No, dance with her.
Well, you know, if you were doing the most basic dance moves, right, but the cape was moving in such a way that like it almost augmented the moves. Like, and I don't mean it's manipulating you physically. It just like it makes things look cooler and more. I don't know. I think that the cape could do a lot for his dance moves without physically manipulating him.
Yeah. I think it could add a lot to a lot of his life.
Like, you know, the Disney, like these Disney movies, like where Bella is twirling in Beast's like grand ballroom. Like if she was just wearing jeans, that would not have looked so magical. But when she's wearing the dress and it's twirling, it looks so, I think even the most basic things. Like, this guy's going to win Dancing with the Stars from the cape. He's just going to be the dude doing the dance and hitch without it.
Oh. I like it.
I'm telling you. Dancing with the Stars.
Literally, because he astral glides.
He astral glides? I thought you said astro glides. I was thinking of, like, that slippery lubricant. Sorry.
Sometimes they hang out in the temple and they spray the floors down. They just run all over it.
If you put Astro Glide on the floors, like people would just slip and die. Like that's the most slippery stuff ever.
And Strange during the movie was talking about Beyonce and Adele. Like there's a couple Adele songs and a lot of Beyonce songs you can dance to. So I feel like he likes to dance.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he's stylish. He goes to all those doctors, kind of balls. Like he even thought that Rachel McAdams would think they were fun.
Yep.
I mean, she's like, just sitting around watching him dance, like watching him be full of himself on the dance floor.
Like if you have one spoon and you try to make music, it's terrible. But if you have two spoons, it's a revolution. That's the way I look at Strange in his cape.
And if there is no spoon, it's the 116th iteration of the one.
Oh. Wait, is that Jet Li movie?
I was just making up 116th. I was going with The Matrix.
Oh, that's an in-depth Matrix one. Oh, jeez Louise.
You know, I'll bet back in 1999, the spoon would have been one of the characters.
Yep. Oh, and actually the Tick loves spoons. Oh, goodness. We're really going down a rabbit hole here.
What are we going to find down there? What's next?
Keanu.
Dude, so I saw the trailer for this just today. I'd never seen the trailer because I just watch on my DVR. That is like one of the cutest film kittens ever. Yeah.
And they had to use 7 cats because 2 of the cats grew too big throughout production. So they were training cats throughout the entire shoot. And they were getting them used to set life, and they were all adopted. No cats were hurt. Some cats were better at, like, you know, pulling strings. Some cats were better at running. Some cats were sitting still. But they used 7 kittens during that, and no cats were hurt. They were like, they taught them not to be afraid of squibs. Like, everyone loved these kittens. And the director was like, man, he's like, the director brought his cat from LA to be out there in New Orleans, because he's like, if I gotta work with cats all day, I'm not going home to an empty house. I want my cat there. So he had his cat. You have these adorable kittens with little hats on. Luis Guzman's running around with them. Like, everyone wants these cats.
I want the cat in the do-rag.
Yeah, that was adorable. They taught that cat that every time they put the hat on that cat, they give him a treat. So he got used to, like, wearing the hat. He didn't mind wearing the hat that much.
So in the movie Keanu, do they explain how he named the cat Keanu?
Yeah, because it's kind of funny because he walks in and he finds his cat and he goes, it's Keanu, named after Cool Breeze or something in Hawaiian. Like, he didn't even name it after Keanu, the actor. He just said, like, after the phrase. But then later on in the movie, Keanu talks. Like, the cat is talking with Keanu's voice.
Wait, with Keanu Reeves' voice?
Yep.
Do you, like, Keanu is actually, like, he did it. It wasn't someone doing an impression?
Yeah, it was Keanu Reeves talking as the cat.
He is just sneaking into movies this year. Like, he snuck into Neon Demon in a totally random role. Yep. Like, I think that he's just wandering around like a vagrant on movie sets these days. How is he getting in these movies?
Dude, it's Keanu, man. You're not going to say no to him.
Like, if I'm making a movie and Keanu's like, hey, can I be in your movie? I'm like, yeah, Keanu.
They're like, yeah, and the cat is named Keanu and the movie is not named Keanu.
Well, you know, yep. It's a nature documentary, Keanu. Like, I don't care, man. I just want to get in the middle of it. I'm like, all right, just go in there.
And then he's getting chased by those snakes. So instead of Planet Earth 2, it's that little iguana. Instead, it's Keanu being chased by snakes.
Yeah. I would watch that.
I'd be so scared for that cat.
Oh no, I'm talking about the human being, not the kitten.
Wait,
oh,
yeah, we're talking about Keanu then?
No, Keanu, the human being chased by snakes.
Right, but is he miniature?
No, he's...
Then why is he running from those snakes?
I mean, I would run from snakes.
Nah, I just fight those snakes.
I ain't fighting no snakes. If there's a snake busters, I'm quitting.
I just start kicking wildly at the ground as they come at me.
But Keanu is adorable. And also in that movie, Will Forte has quite an ordeal with a large snake.
With a large snake?
Yep.
My favorite Will Forte, who's playing that weird drug dealer in the trailer.
My favorite line is there's this gang called the Blips, and it's people that were kicked out of the Bloods and the Crips, and the Blips. And then there's like the 17th Street Blips. Yeah, so the Blips, and I think that's the last one. Keanu, right? Keanu the cat is the wrapping up our non-human best characters of 2016.
Keanu with the adorable mewing and the do-rag.
Oh, he's so cute.
I did have one more. I didn't know it really qualified, though, as a non-human character. I don't know. Do you guys want to hear it?
Yeah.
It's Swiss Army Man, Daniel Radcliffe.
Oh, so like the dead body?
Yeah. Yeah, like, I mean, it's a corpse. It was a human, right?
So I feel like, is a corpse a human?
I mean, that...
Well, what exactly was Daniel Radcliffe's body anyway? Like, it wasn't like a normal corpse. you know?
Yeah, he did turn that into some kind of, like, propulsion thing, like a jet ski, didn't he?
He was
like,
a jet ski. He was a water fountain. He was a...
He was a Swiss Army man.
Yeah.
Have you watched the movie Love and Good? I don't want to give away the ending.
I haven't, but I probably won't see it until it's on HBO anyway.
Okay, yeah. I don't want to give away the ending, but... I mean, I would put him in there. I you know what? I mean, I brought in a scissor lift, so I think a farting corpse uses.
You know what? Like Bernie from Weekend at Bernie's, I would veto, but because Ratcliffe's dead character is so inhuman and in what he's used to do, like that makes me want to allow it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a farting jet ski. He gets dressed up.
Sure. Sure.
He helps Paul Dano learn valuable life lessons.
Yeah,
I love that movie.
He kind of did it all. Like,
so he's like a farting corpse Wilson.
Yeah.
Actually.
Yeah, kind of.
He was also like a compass. I'm not going to go in detail. But yeah, he was like a compass for Paul Dano.
Oh, yeah. And a machine gun.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. Swiss Army Man's one of those like movies where it's like, you don't really know what you're watching, but you kind of dig it, you know?
You're not going to forget it.
No, no. I've never...
Are you kidding me? I remember, like, everything I saw on the preview pretty crisply, and I haven't even seen that in months.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, do yourself a favor and watch it. This is the type of movie that I recommend to film buffs or just people that watch a lot of movies in general, because I feel like those are the type of people that can really appreciate how weird and unique this movie is. You know, like it just kind of stands out on its own.
I mean, it is different.
yeah. All right, well, I guess that does it for the top non-human characters of 2016. It was an interesting year for non-human characters, you know.
I mean, you know, scissor lifts, heptapods.
Yeah. Yeah.
Farting boner corpses.
Yep. All right, guys. Before we sign off, are there any plugs you want to make?
Yeah, guys. Just be ready for our 100th episode. It's going to be crazy. And the lamb, the large
Myron Levengood, Jupiter sending
the large association of movie blogs. Check them out, lamb, largeassmovieblogs.com. Great people, good fun, good karate kicks.
Yeah, yeah. And Levengood, any plugs?
No.
Okay. No.
No. Plugs.
Right, that was abrupt.
For my co-host Mark Hoffmeyer.
Viva Las Las.
John Levengood.
Still no plugs.
I've been host John Lawson. Thank you so much for listening.
5 seconds till shark drop. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Drop the shark! Go! Go! Go!
This podcast is a Shark Dropper Studios production.